Uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
Josh Reeves, thanks for being with us tonight for another late night moon bat edition of the show. It is Thursday, May the 3rd, 2012, into Friday, May the 4th, 2012. Thanks for being with us and staying up late with us tonight, starting the show even later, even more into the moon bat hours tonight. Because there just wasn't a lot of material, but subsequently here in the past, 10 minutes before the show was about to start, I found like five more stories I didn't have, so there you go. So we'll be getting into some interesting news stories for you here tonight, and we'll also be continuing our series of reading from the astral plane, its scenery, and its inhabitants. And it has been getting very interesting lately. I had a request from a listener to read, because one of the first, I guess it was the first book I ever read on air back in 2008 was Vera Stanley Alder's The Finding of the Third Eye, which is, if you've never read it or never heard my reading of it or anything like that, definitely a good introduction for a lot of people to a lot of stuff. You have to understand the standpoint of it, but, you can learn a lot from it. It essentially collects all the, Eastern traditions and all that Eastern knowledge and stuff together. But someone had requested that I read another one of her books. Vera Stanley Alder's The Fifth Dimension for the next book that I read. So that's kind of a good segue, I think, from our current reading into that. So, absolutely, yeah, I will honor that request, and I'll read that one. I'll read that one next on the show. So, thanks for the request there. Most of the stuff that I've read here on the show has been at the request of people. God's Beaten was at request. Lost Book of Enki was at request. Emerald Tablets of Thoth was at request. Last End of Days section that we read was, yeah. TheGlobalReality.com is my website. It's TheGlobalReality.com. Up there you'll find everything pertaining to my work. And you will find archives of past shows. You will find the documentaries I've made up to this point, including The Secret Right Volume 2, my latest major release film that came out last year, which continues the research into the origins of the truth movement, patriot movement, conspiracy genre, its connection to the world order at large that it claims to expose. And I've done a lot of work in that area, and it's very important information. I still try to stress to people to look at that stuff and understand it and get into it and research it, because you know, it makes your palate better, so to speak. You know what I mean? It really does. It makes your bullshit detector a lot more refined. And then it becomes a lot more difficult for these hucksters and snake oil salesmen and gatekeepers, agents, spooks, feds, whatever have you. It makes it a lot more difficult for them to be able to deceive you when you have a lot more of the information on who really controls a lot of these individuals in these groups. So that's definitely one to check out there. I've been kind of on a uploading tear lately. I've been just uploading all kinds of new stuff up on the YouTube channel. The past couple weeks, we've loaded up several new things. We got the Seagrant Volume 2, Hour Number 1, edited version that YouTube flagged, even though we paid for the footage. We got that up there. So all three parts of the film are up there for free. You can also get it on DVD and Blu-ray at my website, theglobalreality.com. We also have the part 5 of our 3-year ongoing mini documentary film series, the Reality of Illusion series. Part 5 just came out about a week ago, and we just had so many views on it up to this point. It's been great. That's entitled The Secrets of the Sun. And I just last night in the chat room, let me first say this. Oh, about 4 years or so ago, I hadn't been on air very long. I'd maybe only been on it 5 or 6 months or so at that time. He used to have this caller who used to call in. Yeah, I remember he would call in every Friday without fail for like 6 months straight. And every time he would call in on a Friday, he would be ranting and raving, going crazy about, you got to get outside and you got to look at the moon. You got to go out there any given night. It doesn't matter. Get yourself some night vision goggles. I'm like, man, I can't afford fucking night vision goggles. They're $2,000. You know? Got to make it easier for me. And then just, you know, from that to that guy to several other people and a bunch of people I know have always said that, you know, if you just go point up binoculars even or telescopes of the moon, you'll see these, you know, lunar anomalies, these black things that seem to squiggle and fly around the moon. And Nikola Tesla in our chat room last night was saying that was going on, so I went outside and aimed my camera up there and, you know, put it on the editor and put it through some filters, put a little bit of it through a red filter, slowed the footage down from, you know, about 10% less in real time, slowed it down. And then at one point in the video, I put a night vision filter over it. And boy, there's one part in there. I guess I should have went in there and kind of, it's just difficult to do that. I was trying to get it up quick. I didn't really have time to go in there and identify each little spot. I was hoping it would be interesting for you. I put some goofy classical music played on Moog synthesizer in there. Just, you know, just to be goofy. I love how so many people, you can really tell who has a sense of humor and who doesn't real quick and doing some of this stuff sometimes, you know. Because I get people, oh, my God, I can't believe it. And I get other people who just don't even get what I do at all. You know, they don't get what I'm trying to do with music ever. But, you know, if you don't like it, just turn the goddamn sound down. It's irrelevant to what's there anyway. But, you know, I wanted you to have to actually dedicate your time to looking at something, you know, and actually see for yourself what's there and not be dependent on whether or not that's just me or somebody else seeing something. But during that infrared part, the night vision part, boy, there's a big black streak, a big black something comes across. And there's several of those. You can see them throughout the video. You know, what these are, what causes these, you know, your guess is as good as mine. But either way, I don't know. It's so funny to me sometimes, just the shit that people will say negative things about for just no reason. You know, what's wrong with going out with a camera, you know, with 160x digital zoom and going out and pointing it up at the moon because you can fucking zoom in like super close. You can see craters like a motherfucker, especially, you know, filming in full high def. You know, what's wrong with going out and doing that and bringing back and see? Because, I mean, for years I've heard people say on any given night you can just see stuff all around the moon every night. I've heard that for years and years and years, but I've never gone out and done it for myself. And so when I heard Nikola Tesla in the chat room say that last night, I was like, oh, I'm going to go out and see this. And, you know, sure enough, there it is, just like people had said. So I thought that was kind of an interesting thing and thought I would, you know, whip up something and put it up there. And it's just, you know, it's just funny to me to see the negative comments and things. It's like, you know, if you don't like it, you know, okay, that's fine. But, you know, some people do get something from this stuff. Some people are interested in seeing things. You know, if it's true, like I've been hearing for almost about five years now, I've been hearing, you know, every given night there's stuff flying around the moon. But, you know, how do you believe it unless you go see it for yourself? So I went and saw it for myself, made a video of it. I put it up on YouTube to show that I've seen it for myself. And then you get all these negative comments. It's just like, you know, what is, I mean, that is what is ultimately going to be our undoing, is our cynical, apathetic, programmed ego selves that we think makes us cool, but really just makes us these condescending turds. And, you know, I do have that moral dilemma sometimes doing this, you know, I really do. Because there are a lot of fucking people out there, man, that if you gave me a chance, I'd pull the fucking trigger myself. Because there are some just worthless motherfuckers out there, you know? And sometimes, you know, sometimes just for a minute, you kind of go, you know what, I think I kind of identify with these eugenics motherfuckers for a second. You know what I mean? Sometimes you just want to push the button, dude. Kill, kill, kill. You just want to launch a fucking airstrike. And I do. I go through that sometimes. Are people even worth trying to inform? I mean, I think there are some people that are out there that are worth informing. Whether or not they found me or I found them yet is irrelevant at this point. But I think there are some. But goddamn, man, we're just gonna. I think we're gonna have to like take all the people that get it, which is kind of a small number from where I'm standing. Not too small, but, you know, still not big in the grand scope of things. But seriously, maybe that's better. I think we should just take the small amount of people that get it, that we know get it and understand all this, and we should, like, you know, figure out how to open the halls of a mentee and go through the Stargate and ascend and leave the rest of these fuckers down here to burn. What do you say? You with me? Really, I think that's my goal at this point. Yeah, I'm going to get this new film out, The Lost Secrets of Ancient America, Part 1. Then we're going to make Part 2. We're going to go dig up the rock wall. And then we're going to figure out the harmonic band frequency spectrum that we need to use our voices with. Oh, you didn't know that? Yeah, that's how you use it. It's frequency vibrations. That's how you open the gates. That's why the rock wall has piezoelectrical properties to it. And when they rolled a fucking caterpillar up on top of it and had the engine running, the whole wall the guy who did the original dig said that he had he could sense an auditory perception of the entire length of the wall when this thing is vibrating, because it has piezoelectrical properties to it. It's an energy and frequency sound generator. Many of the temples and mounds and caves and everything else they found all around the world are like this. The ancient ruins on the island of Malta, where, of course, the Knights of Malta have their headquarters at, where the strange grooves in the rock are that look like, you know, what you would use for like a landing strip, like you see on a aircraft carrier or something like that. But yeah, you know, I think we're gonna have to figure out how to open up the portals and get the fuck out of here. You know, I don't know. I do know that I love the fact that people talk a lot of shit, and they sure talk a lot of shit when you're hanging your ass out there like me and other people are doing this kind of stuff. You know, they talk a lot of shit, man, but they never, ever, ever once bring any conflicting information to the table. And it's never about the information. It's always ad hominem personal attacks. you know, character assassinations, everything else, made up horse shit, lies. And they can never, and they really think because they're on, they're still on that such a, that low vibratory state. They think that people, that everybody out there still buys into that, and some people do, but a lot of people don't. And the majority of my listenership, at least the ones I talk to anyway, are about the information. They just, they're like me, same as me. They want answers. They want this knowledge. They want to find out what it is, and that's what I do, and that's what I'm, why I'm here. And you know, we're trying to do something here that's that, that's for the people, for once, not you know some controlled group that's just another extension of the same power structure what we're talking about here. And my God, man, it's I got to be honest with you. I mean, the amount of outlets out there now for real information, I got to tell you, from where I'm standing, look like they're getting slimmer and slimmer. And that's worrying the shit out of me. Because that tells me that the disinformation is taking hold in a large way, and people putting out real information are getting strangled out. Or they're conforming to... That's what a lot of stuff is. A lot of this stuff is, you know, it takes one person that has a strong will to introduce disinformation, and then there's a snowballing effect that occurs with people who just want to go along to get along and want people to like them and want to fit in and be a part of a group and a club. And so they'll, you know, they'll go along with something without even researching it on their own just to feel accepted. So, you know, we need other people out there to start stepping up and doing some radio shows and stuff like that. I mean, I'll, you know, I'll be happy if some, if any of you out there want to start up your own shows and stuff like that. I'm not going to sit over here and run the board 24 hours a day. I got shit I got to do. I'm not going to do that. But, you know, if somebody out there does a show and I think it's good enough, hell, record your show every day and send it to me and I'll play it here on the network. But you got to be good, man. You know what I'm saying? You got to be good. Bring your A game. That's all I ask. TheGlobalReality.com is my website. I'm going to be working on getting us a secure SSL secure server, chat server, chat box, chat room, and go send out the old Chitango, Fed Tango, Spook Tango, Troll Tango into the dark black fucking abyss of which it came. I've been meaning to do this for so long and just never got around to it. So I was looking at that earlier tonight. I've got the order in. It's going to cost like $50 to get it going, and that's going to be like $30 a month. So if we could get some help in here on that, I mean, five people donate $10, you know, we can get that covered. Yeah, then it'll be like $30 a month after that. But, you know, that's, I'm not that worried about it. I think it's going to be worth it. You'll be able to register your name. Nobody will be able to take your name. You can register your name. There won't be... it'll be completely encrypted. You won't have to worry about people PMing you every time you come to the chat room to talk shit on me. And by the way, I know who those people are, and they work for the Genesis Communications Radio Network up in Minnesota, because that's what their IPs indicate. But you won't have to worry about any of that. So those of you who maybe in the past enjoyed the chat room but didn't like the bullshit along with it, maybe this will bring more people. It'll be totally secured. It'll be totally on lockdown. There won't be any chicanery going on, because as soon as I see somebody come in with bullshit names and bullshit stuff, I won't even let them get through the fucking front door. So, there we go. Yeah, no more trolls, woot woot. Yeah, I'm with that. I am with that. GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com is my email address. That's GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. If you want to send in an email anytime, and ask a question. Do that tonight during the show as well here. It's late night, and I'm down and open to talk about whatever. TheGlobalReality.com. I'm sorry, I keep saying that. Global Reality Show. I keep meaning to say the email address, saying the email, the website address instead. I'm just going to stop myself right there. Not do it for the third fucking time. GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. I had a question. I didn't have a lot of mail really today, but there was one in here in particular I wanted to address. This is from Brad. Brad says, "Hi there, Josh. I was listening to last night's show on YouTube, and at the end, you were reading about sound vibrations and these ancient prehistoric uses. Then I'm seeing the ancient mines down in Africa, one known in very ancient times, the Abzu, or the Picts, I should say, of them, and it kind of ties in with this stuff right now that you read last night at the end of your show. It would be fascinating to see in just what matter the whole setup might have looked like when it was operating by the Anunnaki when they were doing all that gold mining in the Abzu. In my mind's eye, I pictured all these cables carrying the power needed over to the big machines that were drilling and blasting." Oh, I probably had the wireless Tesla, what we know is the Tesla stuff, you know, and the energy and electricity is there all around us. Anybody with advanced technology, I mean, I think that's what a lot of these orbs and stuff like that, you see all there. Antigrav technology they figured out how to harness the energy that's just there. We read some of that recently, too. They were blasting by some kind of laser pulse system. Makes you wonder just how did they get the whole thing started up sound-wise to the frequency needed to get the laser pulse started. Well, in the beginning, there was the word. Manly P. Hall, in some of his writings, talks about the Kabbalistic origins of the creation of man and these, essentially these phrases, Kabbalistic phrases, that when uttered and said in the right way, and you know, you have to be somebody who's gone through years and years and years of training to be able to learn how to do this, and it's very, very guarded secret. But from what the ancient writings say and what Manly P. Hall says is that you can actually call into being, you know, anything, universes, planets, anything, into material being by using only the spoken word and using these phrases to do it. And that's what I'm finding more and more in my research is these talk about... Because all you know, in all of these ancient temples and everything, you see, its frequencies are always a big part of it. Himmler's, Wevelsburg Castle there's areas around there where there's even the outside of it, where acoustics and frequencies, with the frequencies, that's what they're doing, is they use these in magical seances and rituals, even like the you know, when you say an that's a magical frequency that you're doing there that attunes you with the, you know, with the source. Because you're using every sound that the human voice can make simultaneously at once, and it's the oldest known word for God. And that's what it is. It's a frequency. And when you go and you do it long enough, you can start to feel the frequencies going through your whole body. And these ancient sites were built on that. I mean, you see this in all kinds of buildings. I mean, hell, even here in downtown Dallas next to where they have a little Stargate at, they have a miniature representation of the Tower of Babel in there. It was a stained glass spiral window, Fibonacci thing when you go in there all the way up to the top. And if you stand below this thing and hum, you can actually literally hear the sound spiral up into this spiral and then spiral down back into your head, the top of your head, as you're putting out a sound. It's amazing. So, yes, that's the frequencies are also used, as we talked about last night, in antigrav technology. This is what was used to lift all the great stones of the great monoliths and Egypt and all the rest of this stuff, Stonehenge. The guy, I talked about this last night, too, the guy in Coral Castle, at Coral Castle in Florida, who, by the way, was a Freemason, You can go watch the videos, Coral Castle and all that stuff, and do the research on it. You see this, he always has this little crane, have this little box on it. And, you know, magnets and all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's frequency really is what the whole thing boils down to. Being able to manipulate matter and in some cases create physical matter using these sound vibration frequencies that are produced by the voice and are also produced. Well, you have to have the keys, and the keys are these Kabbalistic writings and these Kabbalistic chants and phrases that go back way, way, way back, you know, to the original civilizations, you know, of the Canaanites and that whole area. But that's what I'm finding more and more in this research for this film is just how big because they always, whenever you find this stuff, it's always just kind of thrown in there as a side note. You know what I mean? You'll go read something about some ancient site and it'll say, strangely, the site is also tuned to, you know, this sound. Well, for instance, I mean, they found one of the sarcophaguses, I think they found, or the tombs they found in the Great Pyramid in Egypt, was tuned to the frequency of the human heart. Now, tell me that's just an accident. And there's been, you know, lots of other sites that have been attuned to frequencies, and that's the part of it we haven't gotten to yet that they haven't allowed us to know about, is the fact that, you know, these portals or whatever they may be seem to be able to be opened up to whomever has the keys, the phrases necessary to activate this energy. So thanks for the email, Brad. Appreciate that. All right. Let's see if I have any other questions here. Oh, I also want to put this out there. We've had several people that have offered to get us footage for the new film. I need to have, I mean, not to put the pressure on you, but I'm on a schedule here. I got to maintain. I need to have everybody's footage. If you're going to go out and shoot footage, you got a month. I need to have everybody's footage in no later than June 1st. And we had somebody who was going to go to the Cahokia Mounds in Illinois. I don't know if that's, and I had said something about it here on the show. I guess I don't know if they heard the show or not. Just said to upload that to YouTube. I don't know. So I really could use footage of that, the Cahokia Mounds in Illinois. Another one is the Okmulgee Mounds, which are in Macon, Georgia. It's like about 2 hours from the Georgia Guidestones. Yeah, the Okmulgee Mounds, that's another one I need footage of. Macon, Georgia is where those are. I wanted to go to that on my trip, but it just didn't work. Didn't work out. My buddy had to get back. what else was there? There was some. They're just all of this stuff all over the place. Tons in Ohio. Wisconsin. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff in Wisconsin. But whatever footage any of you guys can get out there for the film, please do so in the next month so we can get that, get those in the film. Fort Ancient in Ohio was the one, the other one that Pisces was going to go to. I think he said he did go to it, or I can't remember what exactly he said, but I think he's going to try to get that one for us. Anything in Michigan? Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff in Michigan. I actually just got this. Well, hold on a second. Give me just 1 second. Let me wheel over here and grab this book real quick. Give me just 1 second. Okay, so I put out the call about this a couple weeks ago and said, let me fix my headphones. No, I don't want to roll over. Oh, damn it. I'm like rolling over my headphones here. Give me a second. Sorry about that. All right. A couple of weeks ago, I put out a call about this book. You can get this book pretty cheap on Amazon. But I'll go over this one more time. The Nephilim Chronicles, a travel guide to the ancient ruins in the Ohio Valley. If you live in the following states, you need to get this book. Ohio, Indiana, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Michigan. Let me see here. Yeah, Ohio, Indiana, West Virginia, Kentucky, Michigan. Michigan. Yeah, here we go. Cass County, Michigan. Archaeological Atlas of Michigan by Wilbur H. Hinsdale, 1937. A group of nine mounds, some of which are still conspicuous, lay upon the east side of Somerville Village. This, what's interesting about this book, too, is this book tells you, if you live in any of those states, I mean, it makes it very easy for you. I mean, it actually gives you directions, tells you right how to get to these mound locations. That's why it's a great book. It's a great resource. And it could be a lot of fun for you. I wish I made one like this for my area, but it could be a lot of fun for you if you know where these areas are. But it lays down from Kalamazoo County. There's some there. But, here we go, Kent County. And what's interesting, again, when you look at this book, is seeing how it makes you wonder how many times you've been in the woods as a kid or in your life or as an adult or any time. It makes you wonder, I mean, is it our idea of what we know about mountains and stuff like that, but hills, things that we think are like natural hills are not really natural hills. And a lot of these mound locations, yeah, if you didn't know it was a mound, you didn't know it was something special about it, you would think it was just, you know, a hill with trees growing out of it, because that's what it really looks like. But, the name of the book is The Nephilim Chronicles, A Travel Guide to the Ancient Ruins in the Ohio Valley by Fritz Zimmerman. Travel Guide to the Ancient Ruins in the Ohio Valley by Fritz Zimmerman. And again, it covers Ohio, Indiana, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Michigan. But yeah, you people in Wisconsin, man. Whew. All kinds of stuff up there. Let's get into our news here tonight. See what we have. This was kind of one of those slow, well, not really a slow news day, but it's just, you know how it is. Everything starts focusing on one particular thing, and then that's all they focus on, and it just becomes a bunch of crap. Supermoon may outshine meteor shower this weekend. The biggest full moon of the year and so-called supermoon will take center stage when it rises this weekend and may interfere with the peak of an annual meteor shower created by the leftovers from Halley's Comet. The supermoon of 2012 is the biggest full moon of the year and will occur on Saturday, May 5th at 11:35 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, though the moon may still appear full to sky watchers on the day before and after the actual event. At the same time, the annual Eta Aquarid meteor shower will be hitting its peak, NASA scientists say. Its light will wash out the fainter Eta Aquarid meteors, NASA meteor expert Bill Cook of the Marshall Space Flight Center told Space.com in an email. Still, Cook said there is a chance of the brightest fireballs from the meteor display may still be a visible man. I wish I could go out to some remote area with my camera this weekend. Damn. Anybody want to go on a road trip this weekend? Shit, let's go. A supermoon occurs when the moon hits its full phase at the same time it makes its closest approach to the Earth for the month. A lunar milestone known as a perigee. Scientists also refer to the event as a perigee. Yeah, there's the energy, I'm sure, will be fucking popping off the charts. Saturday night, you know. First of May. Outdoor fucking begins today. Oh, man. That is just too funny. You know, for years, again, yesterday's, as I always say, yesterday's conspiracy theory is today's fact, isn't it? Survivors of the shooting of 13 students by the Ohio National Guard during an anti-war demonstration at Kent State University in 1970 called on Thursday for a new probe into the incident that came in to define U.S. divisions over the Vietnam War. Four students were killed and nine wounded in the shootings on May 4, 1970 that followed days of demonstrations on the campus after disclosures of a U.S.-led invasion of Cambodia that signaled a widening of the war in Southeast Asia. Kent State was shut down for weeks after the shootings, and student strikes closed down the schools across the nation. On the eve of the 42nd anniversary of the shootings, four students wounded that day asked U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, well, I can already tell you're not going to get any truth out of that guy. Christ. The guy's like Earl Warren reincarnated. Four students wounded that day asked U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder to investigate digitally enhanced audio evidence they believe proves an officer ordered the guardsmen to fire on the unarmed students. Dun, 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 dun. For years, they've tried to say that was a conspiracy theory. When everybody known it was true. They fired on their own citizens back then, and they've ran a PR campaign for years to try to make it seem that they didn't, but they did. What's past is prologue. I mean, you're going to see this all over again. Get ready. That's what they're planning here. But I love how now that, you know, for years this has been a conspiracy theory. They're allowing this in the RFK thing, it seems, to come out simultaneously. A piece of pottery given to Goodwill by an anonymous donor may in fact be a prehistoric artifact taken from a Native American burial site in Oklahoma. The Buffalo News reports that the mysterious piece of pottery traveled through Goodwill's internal distribution system before arriving in New York. Employees at Goodwill had no knowledge of the item's potential significance and put it up for auction, where it received two bids for just $4.99 before several readers pointed out its potential historical value. A note inside the 7.5-inch piece of pottery reads, "Found in a burial mound." Oh, my goodness. Found in a burial mound. I mean that they excavated one there. Found in a burial mound near Spiro, Oklahoma in 1970. That's just, how synchronistic is this story like this coming out right now while I'm doing this film? We're pretty amazed that the thing wasn't A, broken, or B, just thrown out, Jeremy Jahaz, Goodwill's local social media and website coordinator, told the Buffalo News. Local New York affiliate WKBW says Goodwill has received a number of unintended donations over the years, including a book written by Albert Einstein in German and an autographed copy of Mickey Mantle's book. Oh, I found all kinds of crazy, you know, books and stuff like that worth of mint at Goodwill before. Oh, yeah. It's thought that the piece originates from the Spiro Mounds archaeological site in Oklahoma. Anybody know where that is? Spiro Mounds archaeological site? Oklahoma's not far from me. Well, goddamn it, put it on the list. The Spiro Mound archaeological site in Oklahoma, meaning it could potentially be several thousand years old. It's older than that. According to the Oklahoma Historical Society, the site was a permanent settlement for approximately 800 to 1,450 people, but that people have inhabited the area for 8,000 years. Goodwill says it is returning the peace to the Caddo Indian Nation. You know how they slipped that in there? You see that? Well, they had about, a couple hundred years ago. People been there for 8,000 years. We don't know who it is. Once we were alerted to what it was, there was no doubt that we were happy to donate back to them. And it's interesting. It's this, like, spiky-looking thing. And to me, it looks like it's made out of metal. Very interesting. Missing leap gene found that triggered leap in intelligence 2 million years ago allowed early humans to start talking. It is a question that has long puzzled scientists. What made our ancestors break away from apes and advance so dramatically? Cosmic rays, man. Now researchers believe that they may have explained the missing link, a duplicated gene. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun! Uh-oh! Oh, snap. A duplicated gene? Well, what? Gee whiz, Wally. What are we doing now with our gene science, the whole industry around genes? Duplicating genes, right? Stem cells and all that stuff. Wow, duplicating a gene sounds like high science and technology. Oh, no, it was just some random Darwinian evolutions, what that was, son. Researchers believe that a copy of gene SRGAP2, we'll call it, SRGAP2, which appeared in ape men around 2.5 million years ago, helped our brain cells move faster and make more connections, enabling the brain to become more complex. Skate, skate, skate! I love it. Oh, this is all just coincidence. Yes. Just that plain and simple Darwinian evolution, nothing more. A duplicated gene, wow, and it just happened. That duplicated gene just happened to help our brain move faster and make more connections. Right. It just all happened naturally. Man wasn't interfered with. I mean, evolution, it takes millions of years. It happens over a slow time period. But, of course, again, with another coincidence, because everything is coincidence, man just coincidentally evolved at a much more rapid rate. Unexplained, they say. Horseshit. It is explained. Writing in the journal Cell, they suggest the process explains how our species developed speech, complex behavior, and mastery of tools right around that same time. Wow. Well, I wonder why. Yeah, we went from fucking to give me a cheeseburger. We went to that overnight. Hyperventilate myself trying to act like an ape. It was like regressing myself back to some primitive monkey form, like I was fucking William Hurt in that movie. What was the name of that movie? The one where he's putting himself in the sensory deprivation tank. You ever seen that shit? That's great. I love this, though. I mean, that's just a great story. Oh, well, yeah, right around that same time. You know, some gene splicing going on, right? I mean, that's a hell of an article right there, folks. I mean, if you look at that information, that's clearly scientific evidence that, regardless of what you want to believe who it was, you don't have to believe it was Anunnaki or this or that. You don't have to believe any of that. But if you really, really investigate it, it's clear there was some tinkering going on. No question. We can argue all day about who it was and why they did it and everything else, but just like we can argue all day long about, who did 9/11 and And what did they use to do it? Was it planes or no planes or nanothermite or fucking Easter bunny dust or who knows what, you know? Well, we can argue about that all day long, but it really doesn't matter. Because it's not about how they did it. It's about finding out, you know, who did it and the mechanisms of control of why they did it. And that's the whole thing with that. I mean, somebody was tinkering around. Somebody accelerated our evolution. And clearly, if this scientific explanation that's coming out now saying that the gene was duplicated, that's done with intent. So, highly interesting story there for you tonight. Heads did roll. The blood and hair that proves Mexicans used stone knives for human sacrifice 1,000 years before the Aztecs. Muscle, tendons, skin, and hair on sharp obsidian knives from 2,000 years ago have proved that the stone weapon was used for human sacrifice. The forensic samples prove that brutal human sacrifices were being carried out in the region 1,000 years before the Aztecs. And I would argue much longer than that. Well, actually, you know, that stuff was imported anyway. That was all that blood sacrificial stuff was not there originally. That was imported from elsewhere. Mexico's National Institute of Anthropology and History said the finding clearly corroborates accounts from later cultures about the use of sharp obsidian knives in sacrificing humans. Researchers in Mexico called it the first conclusive evidence from a large number of stone implements pointing to their use in human sacrifice. Our physical evidence, such as cut marks on the bones of ancient human skeletons, had previously offered indirect proof of the practice. Researchers in Mexico had noticed what they believe were fossilized blood stains on stone knives as long as 20 years ago. But the Institute said it took a methodical examination using a scanning electron microscope to positively identify the human tissues on 31 knives from the Katona site in the central Mexico state of Puebla. The collection of stone knives is from the little-known Katona culture, which flourished just after the mysterious city-state of Tlahuacan. Katona preceded by more than 1,000 years the region's most famous human sacrifice practitioners, the Aztecs. The archaeologists who found the knives gave them to researcher Luisa Manau at the Anthropology Institute's Restoration Laboratories about 2 years ago. With the help from specialists at Mexico's National Autonomous University, they were studied under the scanning electron microscope and found to contain certain red blood cells, collagen, tendon, and muscle fiber fragments. While historical accounts from Aztec times, as well as drawings and paintings from earlier cultures, had long suggested that priests used knives and other instruments for non-life-threatening bloodletting rituals, the presence of the muscle and tendon traces indicate the cuts were deep and intended to sever portions of the human's body. These finds confirm that the knives used for sacrifice were used for sacrifices. Was there ever any doubt? My goodness. You know, they really just think people just made that up. Oh, my God, we can't believe they actually sacrificed humans to these gods. My gosh. We don't sacrifice people to any gods today, do we? No, not in this world, not in our time. We're civilized, goddammit. We wouldn't sacrifice anybody for anything. Bull pucky. These guys do sacrifices all the time. Proof again, you know, what did I tell you? You know, I will not forget or forgive the people who, when the Occupy stuff started coming out, talk shit to me and tell me I didn't know what the fuck I was talking about. Because, you know, like everything, every other op, I sniff out my fucking bloodhound nose, sniff them out in about 2 seconds. I knew that motherfucker was an op from the jump street. And a lot of good little goody two-shoes want to be, you know, I call them armchair activists. Oh, you don't know what you're talking about, man. You're just jealous because you're not in the club, man. We take action, man. Occupy is real, man. And, you know, I said, well, it's going to be infiltrated by these government agents that are anarchists. They're paid government anarchists. It's been proven going all the way back to the WTO demonstrations in Seattle. When was that, 10, 12 years ago? 13 years ago, maybe even now. It was proven then, even at that time, that these anarchists that were coming and doing violence while everybody else was peacefully protesting were on the government payroll, and they always are. And this is how, this is what they do in order to take your right to peaceful protest and make it appear that everybody is about violence. And they do this so that the movements and never gain any ground and never have any effect. More proof of that here. Bungling anarchists attack Nike store during Occupy protests on May Day wearing Nike sneakers. Now, the article here will make you believe that these anarchists were just dumbasses, and, you know, I'll give them that. But I think just calling them dumbasses, not doing it, you know, come on. These guys are obviously fucking agents. That's why they are wearing Nikes while beating the windows and setting a Nike store on fire. Because a real person who was going to go do this would not go and attack something that they were promoting and wearing themselves. First rule of the anarchist handbook: when attacking the big guns of the capitalist world, try not to endorse their products. An Occupy activist missed the irony in his own dress sense during Tuesday's May Day protest. While attacking a Nike store wearing a pair of the brand sneakers. But again, this whole news story here is just, it's a whitewash. They're covering up what it really is. And what it really is, what it is proof that these anarchists are on the drop. No question. Startling evidence suggests the ancient Egyptians understood the inner mechanics of a binary star system spinning through our skies 93 light years away, more than 3,200 years ago. Not only that, their specific calculations have helped support a scientific line of inquiry which only emerged just a few years ago. The binary system, two stars which rotate around each other, was first noted in modern astronomy by John Goodrick back in 1783. He spotted how Algol, also known as the Demon Star, oh, isn't that nice, appeared to decrease in brightness for a few hours every 2.87 days. And was the first to theorize that this was two stars blocking each other's light in relation to Earth. Well, that's what's, you know, unique about our solar system. Most of them are binary, trinary systems. Very, very, the norm is binary, trinary even. Very rarely is there a single star planetary system like ours. Or we thought he was the first. It turns out the Egyptians apparently had all this figured out over 3,000 years earlier. The Egyptians were huge stargazers, taking copious and accurate notes about changes in the heavens and using these to form predictions about lucky and unlucky parts of the day. When Finnish researchers studied the Cairo calendar, a badly damaged but readable calendar, highlighting the good and bad days of a year in 1200 BC, they came to startling observations. The Egyptians not only made observations, they made conclusions and calculations to figure out the inner mechanisms of the stars for their charts. Well, again, they were just doing this for shits and giggles and superstition. That's all it was, superstition and bullshit religion they believed in. They were just primitive dumbasses, and they believed in stars and all that crap. They didn't believe in real stuff like Jesus like we do in this day. That's because we're sophisticated. these alignments are important because, and that's why people for years, you know, would get hung up on the serious thing. And I found that the serious thing is really only one part of it. We've got things aligned to all kinds of different locations. And from my reading and interpreting of the ancient text, that appears to be because these individuals that had come to earth and set themselves up as gods would build temples in the place where it was a jump point for them to go from point A to point B through a stargate to another location in another star system. And it's kind of like a phone number, or, you know, it's kind of like everybody's got, they're all the same, but everybody's got a different one. And so wherever these people would come down and seed the locals with knowledge or religion or whatever else, they would always tell them that, you know, one day I will return, one day there will be a return or the resurrection. And oftentimes this person dies before they go through this. So we think that they died just like, you know, we think Jesus died or whatever have you. But if you really read these ancient texts, they talk about how you have to shed your material body before you can travel through these portals of light, because the portals of light are so strong, like in the halls of Amenti and everything else, that they will just rip your body to shreds. So when we see all these different alignments of these different sites, what many of them are indicating is their alignment to the location of where this deity's abode is when they are not down on Earth. And I think those kind of spots are something good to keep your eye on. You know what I mean? Two cycles were spotted in the Cairo calendar, one that lasted 29.6 days, almost exactly that of the lunar cycle. And the other was 2.85 days, which researchers from the University of Helsinki in Finland ascribed to the Algol system. And as the Egyptians made very specific calculations, their figures appear to have solved a very modern puzzle. The Algol system has now been confirmed as a tertiary system. Three stars in total. Dun, 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 dun. Just like what is Sirius? Wow. Wow. That is interesting. Okay. You know what? I got to be honest with you here. I'm sorry if I'm blunt, but you know what? You know, ladies, maybe turn down your stereo for a minute. I got to be honest here. You know, nothing really gets my dick hard much anymore when it comes to research. You know what I mean? I'm always looking for that next piece of information that's going to make my little twiddly, piggly, wiggly dick get hard. And I got to tell you what, that just did it. I am hard as a rock right now over that. My God. So not only did we have these guys aligning stuff to Sirius, which is, as I mentioned, a tertiary system, meaning a three-star system, but yet Algo, another one here that they had knowledge of, is also a three-star system. Man, that is interesting. The Trinity, Osiris, Isis, and Horus, the original Trinity. That Father, Son, Holy Ghost garbage came later, and it was just, you know, it's the same thing. Father, Son, Holy Ghost, you know, this, that, and the other. It doesn't matter. It's all the same. It's all still the same Holy Trinity, and it comes from Isis, Osiris, Horus, and it's said that those stars systems actually indicate, well, Sirius, for instance, actually indicates and actually represents three of the stars. It's the Trinity of Isis, Osiris, and Horus, and that's what those three stars, the deities those three stars represent. So that would mean that there's probably also three deities that correspond to this Algo system. And meanwhile, one of the stars in this Algo system is known as the Demon Star. Oh, my goodness. The plot thickens. This is radical, dude. Really? The Demon Star, and it's a trinary star system, just like Sirius? And the Egyptians were all about it? Oh, man. Oh, man. That is nice. Daddy likes that. I like when, man, that blew my hair back, for real. Wow. However, the introduction of the third star and the theory that the first two transfer matter between them led scientists to believe their rotation would be slowing down over time. With only 200 years since the first modern calculation of a rotation period of 2.867 Earth days, the theory could not be tested. But thanks to a 3,200-year message from the Egyptians, who demanded accuracy with their accounting, we know that in their day, the rotation period was 2.85 days. Man, oh man, oh man, that's a hell of a story. Wow. Dig it, dig it, dig it. Dig it indeed. All right, well, we're going to take a break, come back, finish up with a few more stories for you here tonight, and get into our reading. TheGlobalReality.com is our website. We have the Chipman banner up there for the bills for the month. Not a lot of support in this week. If we get some help, that'd be fantastic. We also have the one up there for the new film, The Lost Secrets of Ancient America, Part 1. If you want to help out to get that film done and made, please help us out there. We have a P.O. Box. We absolutely can't use PayPal. It's all up there. We're going to take a break, come back, and get into more for you here tonight on the show. This is The Global Reality with me, your host, Josh Reeves. Stay with us.
Mm-hmm. That's a groove. Yeah. Yeah.
When I was a little boy,
when I was just a boy,
the devil called my name.
When I was just a boy,
I say now, who do you think you're fooling?
When I was just a boy,
I'm a consecrated boy.
When I was just a boy,
singer in a Sunday choir. Oh, my mama loves me, she loves me. She rocks me like a rock, oh baby, just love me. She love me, love me, love me, love me. When I was grown to be a man, and the devil would call my name, I say now, who do you think you're fooling? I'm a consummated man. Snatching a pure. She get down on her knees and hug me. Won't she love me like a rock? She rock me like a rock, oh baby, just don't love me. She love me, love me, love me, love me. And if I was the president, the minute the Congress called my name, I say now. Presidential podium. My mama loves me, she loves me. She get down on her knees and hug me. Won't she love me like a rock? She
uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
All right, back here with you on the Global Reality, right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being with us tonight. We've got just a few more news stories to blow through here real quick in this segment of the show. Then we're going to get on to our reading for the night from the astral plane, its habitats, and its scenery. So, I know everybody's anxious, as I am, to continue on with the reading here tonight. TheGlobalReality.com is my website. And, again, please support our work up there. We don't have a sponsor or anything like that now, and we just paid the bills, and so it's kind of low for us right now. So any help we can get in on either that or either help with the film budget, any of that, anything we can get, we would very much appreciate it, very much allow us to be able to keep doing it and keep going. So we've been doing well so far, staying on the schedule that I have for this film and stuff, and it's looking good so far. But if we maintain what we've been at now, we'll be doing all right. So let's jump back here into this for you tonight. The science journal Nature has published the first of two controversial papers about laboratory-enhanced versions of the deadly bird flu virus. Sorry about that. Described by some as a recipe for a bioterror attack. Yeah. Well, who do you think puts the money into researching this? Why do you think it was some government research? Because then they've got plausible, oh, well, you know, some terrorist got a hold of our findings and figured out how to do this. Right. You only put money in studying something because you have the want to use it on someone or something. The virus sparked fears among U.S. biosecurity experts that it could be used as a recipe for a bioterrorist attack. Bird flu is lethal in humans, but in its natural form, it is unable to be spread from person to person by coughing or sneezing. The publication of the paper by Yoshihiro Kawaoka of the University of Wisconsin-Madison on Wednesday follows months of debate. Experts battle over the need for science to be free of censorship against the obligation to protect the public from a potentially devastating flu pandemic. Bird flu is lethal in people and spreads among those who are in close contact with infected birds, but so far, the virus known as H5N1 has not had the ability to pass easily among humans through sneezing and coughing, and sometimes scientists had begun to doubt that it was possible. The studies in Kawaoka and Dr. Ron Fouchier of Erasmus Medical College in the Netherlands changed that view by providing that with a few genetic mutations, the virus could pass easily among ferrets, which are used as a close approximation of how a virus might behave in people. So, this is wonderful. Now they figured out how to do this. Now they just put it out there for anybody. And then, oh, my goodness. Well, look at that. Iran made one of these and dropped it on Dallas. Oh, well, now we need to nuke Iran, don't we? I mean, it's the same old script. It's the same old playbook. They run it over and over and over again. And we just stand by, oh, my God, it's so terrible. What a tragedy. A hair-raisingly close flyby by NASA's Cassini probe aims to learn more about what lurks beneath the icy moon Encladius' surface and what exactly lurks in the geysers of ice it spews into space. Cassini captured a startling new picture of the jets, which a scientist claimed earlier this month could be snowing microbes onto the icy moon. Now, I'm going to put this picture in there for you. Because this is Encladius. And they're saying it's spewing geysers out of it now. And I wonder if, you know, I'm sitting here going, well, I'm looking at this picture here, and I got to be honest with you. I mean, this motherfucker looks like the goddamn Death Star to me. You can literally see at the bottom of it, like, what look like engines. Like, two spots where it looks like there's heat or energy emanating out, And that thing literally looks like a Death Star. So if it's shooting geysers out the top of it, maybe that's some kind of, you know, exhaust plume or something like that. The heat's dissipating out of the top, you know, kind of like a radiator or something does. Look at that. That's a fucking ship. The goddamn moon is, it's like a Death Star. I mean, that's crazy. That really is. I mean, that literally looks like a ship, man. And, you know, there's been speculation that the moon is a ship and maybe other moons of other planets are. These jets, which spew through cracks in the moon's icy shell, could lead back to a habitable zone that is uniquely accessible in all the solar system. This week, Cassini flew past the moon just 46 miles above the surface. The radio science team is particularly interested in learning how mass is distributed under Encladius' south polar region, which feature jets of water ice, water vapor, and organic compounds spraying out of long fractures. Just spraying out into space? That just doesn't seem... I mean, if it's a solid planet, it wouldn't just spew ice and stuff out into... out into space, would it? I mean, our poles don't spew ice out into space, do they? So that's interesting. You know, are they going to study that? Are they going to study? Look at this. Look at this bottom of. Talk about the feathered serpent. Look at this bottom picture here. That looks like a lit up rattlesnake. Look at that. Looks like snake skin, doesn't it? That is just nuts. That thing's a ship. Please. Well, it looks like one of my predictions may be coming real soon, a lot sooner than later now. I, for years, been joking around. It was kind of a joke for a while. Then it started getting serious. Now it looks like it may be a reality. I joke for years, you know, Ray Kurzweil, the big transhumanist guy. Talks about the singularity and all that, merging with machines. Well, he's also, what he's known for other than that is, for you musicians out there may know, Kurzweil synthesizers. Yeah, it's the same guy. And he was the first guy back in the 80s to really start making instruments before, you know, synthesizers were at that point, you had the analog stuff that was all monophonic, one note at a time. Then you had polyphonic, more than one note at a time. And then you started to see digital stuff, FM synthesis and that. But what Kurzweil did is he was the first guy to take actual digital samples of actual instruments and put them into a keyboard where you could play them. And, of course, his biggest client was, of course, Stevie Wonder. And I, for years, have been saying, you know, you watch. One year, Kurzweil's going to roll out to the Grammy Awards with, you know, Stevie Wonder in tow, and he's going to say, I can see, let's rock and roll, you know. He's going to have eyes. He'll have transhumanist eyes. And, apparently this is here now. I've dreamed in color for the first time in 20 years. Blind British man can see again after first successful implant of bionic eye microchips. Not coming in the future. Here, done, in a person right now as we speak, folks. It was the magic moment that released Chris James from 10 years of blindness. Doctor switched on a microchip that had been inserted into the back of his eye 3 weeks earlier. After a decade of darkness, there was a sudden explosion of bright light like a flashbulb going off, he says. Now he's able to make out shapes and light. He hopes his sight and the way his brain interprets what the microchips is showing it will carry on improving. Mr. James, 54, is one of two British men who have had their vision partially restored by a pioneering retina implant. The other, Robin Millar, one of Britain's most successful music producers, says he has dreamed in color for the first time. Both had lost their vision because of a condition known as retinitis pigmentosa, where the photoreceptor cells at the back of the eye gradually cease to work. Their stories bring hope to the 20,000 Britons with RP, blah, 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 blah. But really what they did was they took, you know, a couple of guinea pigs. And, you know, there you go. They'll sell it. They'll sell it for them. They won't even have to sell that technology. These two guys will sell it for them because they are guinea pigs, and they got it. And the guinea pigs always sell you what you need, don't they? I don't know about you, but this, you know, with all this crap in the news, and all this bad stuff, you know, oh my God, the, you know, merging with machines is here. You know, it's here. It's right across. With all this bad stuff happening, I got to say, I am very, very pleased to see that one positive thing has been created, and that is that they have finally figured out how to build sharks with freaking laser beams on their freaking foreheads. Look at that shit, dude. Now, all this crap going on, that will make your day right there. Dr. Evil famously wanted one. No one else would dare go near one, but now one man has paired up nature's most fearsome predator with man's deadliest high-tech gadgetry. Yes, one man has done the unthinkable and strapped a laser on the fin of a shark, supposedly in the name of science, but arguably as a marketing stunt. Marine biologist and television host Luke Tipple, sponsored by Hong Kong laser manufacturer Wicked Lasers, found a lemon shark in the Caribbean and strapped a 50-milliwatt S3 Krypton green laser on top. Oh, that is fucking epic sauce right there. I mean, that is that. And that's not fake. That's not Photoshop, y'all. I'll drop it in. That's fucking real. Look at that shark, dude. That shark's mean as fuck. And he's got a freaking laser beam on his freaking forehead. That is just rad. Look at that shark, dude. He looks like he would eat your ass. Look at those teeth. Who was the crazy motherfucker who put who strapped it on is what I want to know. That's the guy I want to meet. Shake his probably nubbed out hand with no fingers on it anymore. That is pretty rad. That is, I have to say, with all the crap you see on a daily basis, man, to see that, it got a smile, put a smile on my face. It made my day. It made my life a lot better for a minute, I have to say. I just loved that. I don't know why. I just thought that was freaking cool. I mean, why? Why not, right? Look at all the other ridiculous shit these people do. We all get to have a little smile on our face every now and again. All I wanted was fucking freaking sharks with freaking laser beams on their freaking foreheads, and look, they got it, you know? Nazi lesbian hookers abducted by UFOs were forced into weight loss programs. Black holes seem to be in the news a lot lately. I've talked about it in the Sun film I made last week, but it seems that all over the universe, I mean, we're observing strange black hole activity just all over the place. Black holes doing things that we've never seen them known to do before, you know? Supermassive black holes lurk in the center of almost every galaxy, weighing billions of times more than our sun, and NASA has just caught one feeding on a star. And, I mean, that's why I had, speculated in that video that I'd made that black blob thing that with the umbilical cord could have been feeding a miniature black hole caused by CERN feeding off of the sun. And I had somebody leave a comment, oh, that's impossible. Well, look at that picture I just dropped in the chat room. Sorry, buddy, I hate to have to break it to you. It's not impossible. My speculation was correct. This thing got too close to a star, and look what it started doing, sucking it in. And there it is. There's the trail. There's the energy trail. You like the umbilical cord? Look at that. So that definitely makes that Secrets of the Sun video I made all the more interesting. All right, I'm done. I've got more stories here, but I'm gonna save them. You guys getting crunk on Cinco de Mayo this weekend? You guys gonna drink the cerveza? I don't drink anymore. I would, man. I wish I could still drink, but it just does not do anything for me anymore, man. It just makes me feel like shit. I used to enjoy drinking. Used to drink a lot. But, man, I don't know. About a year or so ago, It just quit doing anything for me. I just wasn't. Some people quit drinking because they have a problem or they quit drinking. I never had a problem with alcohol, but when you tell people you don't drink, that's what they automatically assume. Oh, you don't drink. No, I'm not an alcoholic. I didn't have a problem. It literally one day it just didn't do anything for me anymore, so I quit drinking it. You know, there's no sense in poisoning your body if it's not doing anything for you. If you're getting fucked up on it and having a good time, then by all means, do it. I don't have a moral obligation to it, really. Well, I kind of do, yeah. But, not in terms of, like, you know, I don't care if somebody drinks or whatever. It's a personal thing for me. I used to enjoy it, and it just makes me feel like dog shit now. Or I can have, like, one drink, and I'll be all right, but... Man, it's I tell you what, holidays and stuff like that and cookouts are just kind of weird, you know, not drinking for the first time. All right, let's continue on here where we left off last night. With the knowledge of the forces of nature, which the resources of the astral plane place at the command of spirit lights, its inhabitants, the production of what are called spirit lights is a very easy matter. Whether they be of the mildly phosphorescent or the dazzling electrical variety, or those curious dancing globules of light into which a certain class of fire elementals so readily transform themselves. Since all light consists simply of vibrations of the ether, it is obvious that anyone who knows how to set up these vibrations can readily produce any kind of light he wishes. Most of the occurrences of the seance room have now been referred to, but there are one or two transmutation of the rare phenomena of the outer world which must not be left quite without mention in our list. The transmutation of metals is commonly supposed to be a mere dream of the medieval alchemists, and no doubt in most cases the description of the phenomenon was merely a symbol of the purification of the soul. Yet there seems to be some evidence that it was really accomplished by them on several occasions. And there are petty magicians in the East who profess to do it under test conditions even now. Be that as it may, it is evident that since the ultimate atom is one and the same in all substances, and it is only the methods of its combination that differ, anyone who possessed the power of reducing a piece of metal to the atomic condition and rearranging its atoms in some other form would have no difficulty in effecting transmutation to any extent that he wished. The principle of sympathetic vibration mentioned above also provides the explanation of that strange and little-known phenomenon called repercussion. Repercussion, by means of which any injury done to or any mark made upon the astral body in the course of its wanderings will be reproduced in the physical body. And that's absolutely true. And that's why you ever notice, you ever have, I know every single one of you out there at some point has gone to bed, had crazy dreams, and woke up the next day and had bruises on your body in places you couldn't explain. I've actually gotten injured in dreams before. I got shot in a dream one time, and I woke up and had a bruise in that same spot. If you're far enough into the astral plane, they can literally leave marks on your physical body. And whatever this is, it's been my opinion for some time, for at least 10 years. I haven't wavered on this in any of my research. It's not really something I mention all the time. But so, don't be surprised if you didn't know this was my standpoint on this, but it is. I think that's what... what people say alien abductions are, that's what that is. Whoever this is, whether they're aliens or whether they're, government officials, which, Very well could be. Who knows? They have figured out how to operate in that etherical realm. Meaning, it's not your body. See, people always think that when they're abducted by aliens or abducted by whatever it may be, just plain abducted, that their whole body goes. But that's not the case. Whatever this is, they figure out how to abduct your etherical body. That you leave your body from at night when you're in the etherical realms and dreamlands and stuff like that. And so they figured out how to, because whatever the dreamland is, it's some alternate parallel spirit world that we exist on that our brain accesses when we're asleep. And they figured out how to access this and do tests on people. And so people just think they just woke up in the morning and they find, you know, mystery wounds or, you know, in some cases, people who have found implants and things like that. And they think that they've gone up in some, you know, spaceship and been anal probed or raped or something. And probably most of the time, that's probably not the case. But their technology is so advanced, whoever's technology this, whether it's us, you know, government, which could be, or whether it's extraterrestrials, could be, who knows. Somebody has access to technology that's very advanced that gives them access to the, you know, the etherical double of a person and allows them to glean information from it or do something to it, which then in some cases can cause that to materialize on your actual material body after the fact. But that's, I think, why we wake up sometimes with these mystery bruises, mystery wounds on us after having dreams and stuff like that. It's because something happens to your etherical body while you're in dreamland, and your actual body reflects that. We find traces of this in some of the evidence given at trials for witchcraft in the Middle Ages, in which it is not infrequently stated that some wound given to the witch when in the form of a dog or wolf was found to have appeared in the corresponding part of her human body. The same strange law has sometimes led to an entirely unjust accusation of fraud against a medium because, for example, some coloring matter rubbed upon the hand of a materialized spirit was afterwards found upon his hand, the explanation being that in that case, as so often happens, the spirit was simply the medium's astral body, or perhaps even his etheric double, forced by the guiding influences to take some form other than his own. In fact, the astral and physical bodies are so intimately connected that it is impossible to touch the keynote of one without immediately setting up exactly corresponding vibrations in the other. It is hoped, this is the conclusion of what, I don't know. I don't think it's the conclusion of the book. Maybe it is the conclusion of the book. Wow, it's short if it was. It is hoped that any reader who has been sufficiently interested to follow this treatise thus far may by this time have a general idea of the astral plane and its possibilities, such as will enable him to understand and fit into their proper places in its scheme any facts in connection with it which he may pick up in his reading. Though only the roughest sketch has been given of a very great subject, enough has perhaps been said to show the extreme importance of astral perception in the study of biology, physics, chemistry, astronomy, medicine, and history, and the great impulse which might be given by its development to all these sciences. Yet its attainment should never be regarded as an end in itself, since any means adopted with that object in view would inevitably lead to what is called in the East, Laukika, a method of development, a system by which certain psychic powers are indeed acquired, but only for the present personality. And since their acquisition is surrounded by no safeguards, the student is extremely likely to misuse them. To this class belong all systems which involve the use of drugs, invocation of elementals, or the practice of hatha yoga. The other method, which is called Lokottara, consists of Raj yoga or spiritual progress, and though it may be somewhat slower than the other, whatever is acquired along this line is gained for the permanent individuality and never lost again. While the guiding care of a master ensures perfect safety from the misuse of power as long as his orders are scrupulously obeyed, the opening of astral vision must be regarded then only as a stage in the development of something infinitely nobler, merely as a step, and a very small step, on that great upward path which leads men to the sublime heights of adeptship. And beyond even that, through glorious vistas of wisdom and power such as our finite minds cannot now conceive. Yet let no one think that it is an unmixed blessing to have the wider sight of the astral plane. For upon one in whom that vision is opened, the sorrow and misery, the evil and the greed of the world press as an ever-present burden, until he often feels inclined to echo the passionate adjuration of Schiller. Why hast thou cast me thus into the town of the ever-blind, to proclaim thine oracle with the open sense? Take back this sad clear-sightedness. Take from my eyes this cruel light. Give me back my blindness, the happy darkness of my senses. Take back this dreadful gift. This feeling is perhaps not an unnatural one in the early stages of the path. Yet higher sight and deeper knowledge soon bring to the student the perfect certainty that all things are working together for the eventual good of all. That hour after hour, like an opening flower, shall truth after truth expand. For the sun may pale and the stars may fail, but the law of good shall stand. Its splendor glows and its influence grows as nature's slow work appears. From the zoophyte small to the lords of all, through kalpas and koras of years. Well, I guess that's it. I'm trying to turn the page, but it won't turn. Yeah, I suppose that's less. Yep, that's it. All right, well, we finished that book. I didn't think we were there. I didn't know how long the book was. I didn't think we'd finish it tonight, but, well, good stuff. There you go. All right, so we're done with that one. Another great series of reading complete, and we will be picking up next time. I guess we're going to be reading The Fifth Dimension by Vera Stanley Alder. So, nice segue into that. TheGlobalReality.com is my website. That's TheGlobalReality.com. Please go there and chip in and help us out if you can so we can get this work done, folks. We need all the help we can get right now, for sure. My name is Josh Reeves. I love each and every one of you, and we will see you next time. You guys have yourselves a great one. Take care.